This is the Unregistered Podcast, and I'm Thaddeus Russell. This is a show about ideas, people, and behaviors that are considered inappropriate, out of bounds, or beyond the pale. The things you're not supposed to talk about if you're a school teacher, a college professor, a businessman, a politician, a parent, a neighbor, or even a podcast host. These are the things you're not supposed to say or even think if you're a good liberal, a good conservative, or a good citizen. Each week, I'll interview a person who has something bad to say. They might be a journalist or a professor. They might be a porn star or a drug dealer. They might just be an ordinary person with an ordinary job who doesn't care about the rules of polite society. I'm not interested in breaking the rules just to be a troublemaker. I'm interested in people who break the rules of conventional thought and to expand the scope of what is possible to say in our society. I'm interested in people who make me think. He's been called the Willy Wonka of politics, and he's the author of a new book called The New Right, A Journey to the Fringe of American Politics. He's also the most frequently requested guest on Unregistered. This week, he returns for his third appearance on the show. This is my interview with Michael Malice. Michael Malice is here with me in New York City once again by popular demand. I don't know why, but he is the most requested guest. That was an insult right off the bat, Michael. I'm sorry. You are the most requested guest for this show. Do you know why? Do you have any idea why?
Because I'm simply fantastic.
Yeah? Well, so we have to just start. We have to start this interview with a very important topic, which is your haircut. Can you talk about your haircut? Is this because of the book and because you're now touring, promoting the new right and the takeover of the Nazis in this country? And this is why you look the way you do?
Thaddeus Russell.
Hey man, how you doing?
Thaddeus Russell confirmed for Basic Bitch. If you had a little bit more insight, you would see my haircut is asymmetric.
Oh. Oh, we got to take a picture of this. Oh, yeah.
So
it's kind of Marvel superhero, too.
Yeah, so my hairstylist is a drag queen. I go to him for years, and he mixes up every so often. So there is nothing. This is degenerate. It's asymmetry.
From the front, you have to admit, you've got the Richard Spencer fascist cut.
That is not accurate. Oh, so really? I had this cut in many years ago. This was cut from the book, and I had it on a Tuesday. He gave it to me, Gerardo, and Wednesday, I worked for the Times for like 2 months.
Gerardo, that doesn't sound very new, right?
My hairdresser.
Right, and he's a drag queen.
He is a drag queen. So I don't know his drag name.
You're already sort of trying to prove that you're not the kinds of people you write about.
I am the kind of person I write about because I write about heretical thinkers.
Uh-huh.
So the next day, I'm in the hall, and this lady goes, oh, you read the article. And I go, what are you talking about? And literally the next day, there was an article in the Times Style section about the Hitler Youth haircut becoming a thing. But this was many years before the alt-right or the new right was a thing. And that's when the Hitler Youth was in the Style section as, oh, this is a cool thing that people are getting. Huh. So the haircut actually, which I do not have now, which I did have then, precedes this whole movement. Not only historically in the 30s, whatever, but actually in contemporary times as well.
So, okay, but, you know, there's a fine line between drag queen and Nazi, at least in the hairstyle department. No?
Well, you don't see Nazis wear wigs.
Okay. I'm just saying this, you kind of have a shaved sides, you know.
One side.
And then you have like
it's
a
not shaved on the
little,
other side.
Little tuft on top there, you know.
That's pulled back, yeah.
Okay. I'm just saying. Just be
they
careful.
They have the floppy.
I'm just saying they're going to read you as Nazi faster than they're going to read you as Jewish. You know.
Well, I did get my nose done, so that takes care of that one. Yeah.
Oh, that was a good
one. And
move.
I got uncircumcised.
Really? How'd that feel? How does it feel?
Not kosher.
Yeah? Well, I mean, they kill all the nerve endings, so I'm assuming, you know, it feels better now for you.
I didn't realize there was such a autistic / circumcision scene within libertarianism.
Oh.
And I made an offhand comment once on, you know, Tom Woods, this very failed podcaster. I was on his show once. I made an offhand comment, and for years, people are still fixated on it.
About circumcision?
Yeah.
Wait a second. You talked about circumcision on Tom Woods' show?
It was literally a one sentence aside, and all these Aspies just completely lost their shit.
This is funny because I made a one sentence aside about how I have sex workers on my show, on Tom's show. And it was the thing, he said it on someone else's show, that it was the most amazing, crazy thing that ever happened on his show was just me mentioning that I have sex workers on my show. I didn't even go into it.
Yeah.
So that you preceded me with some line about dicks getting sliced. I mean, that must have totally sent them over the edge.
I was surprised because I didn't know this was a thing.
among the Aspie libertarian crowd. Yeah, but they really care about their penises.
Well, they care about other the young men's penises.
Oh, they care about other people's penises.
Yeah, getting circumcised. You know what I mean?
Like, well, that's because they're humanitarians.
Genital mutilation, all this other stuff. Yeah. So, and I have not done any research on this one way or another. It's amazing how we live in a world where everyone has to have a position in everything.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't have a kid. I am not going to...
So, yeah. So, you know, after this interview, I'm dropping out of politics entirely. I'm not going to talk politics anymore. I'm done.
That's a lie.
No, it's true.
Want to bet?
This is it. No, I said to everyone, I'm going to interview Malice for the third time. And then after that, there's going to be no more political talk. And I'm not going to be on Twitter. I'm not going to think about politics.
I'm such a liar.
Hey, man, listen to me. I moved to the West Coast.
I'm listening to lies.
And I started, you know, smoking cannabis and, you know,
cannabis.
And so I'm basically just into love now. I'm into love and
so
nature.
So is Marianne Williamson.
And tell me about her.
Marianne Williamson said, Mr. Trump, you have harnessed hate, but we are going to beat you because I will harness love for political purposes. Huh. She's the presidential candidate.
Oh, yeah. See, I told you I don't follow the news anymore.
But you're quoting her.
Oh, am I?
Yeah, you're harnessing love.
I'm harnessing love. No, I am love. So I don't want to be involved in politics.
If you're love, why are you so hated?
Oh, I'm not. You keep saying this. Why am I? I'm not hated.
Have you seen the comments on this episode that we did this week?
Uh-uh.
They're not nice.
Oh, really? Already? What did I do?
I don't know, but they are not nice.
See, what did I do?
I
watched it back. What did I do that would make people mad? Honestly.
I'm not a Democrat.
So I was on Malice's show on Tuesday, and it was aired live, and it's been on up since then, right? And we talked for an hour about postmodernism,
mostly, yeah,
and then some other stuff at the end.
Sure.
But like, so what on earth are they mad about?
You'll have to read the comments.
So again, last time you were on, I asked you to, like, you know, discuss people you know well who you've studied, like
Why
Jared
would
Taylor.
I be quoting the masses?
And now I'm asking you to tell me what your own fans say about your own show. And you're the one who reads the comments. So what did they say about me?
Smug asshole.
Okay.
Talks out of his ass. If he's trying to make postmodernism sound coherent, he's doing a bad job. Mm. He should stick to topics he knows about. this was embarrassing. These are some of the quotes.
Yeah, that sounds right. Okay. That's a par for the course. Well, whenever I talk about this in front of an audience like yours, yes, absolutely.
Okay.
So when I was on Rogan a couple of years ago now, you know, I talked about, it wasn't postmodernism per se, but I sort of talked about how gender and race are social constructs. And
I don't like that. I don't like repeating insults by people I respect less to the person I respect more.
Say that again?
I don't like repeating insults by the people I respect less to the person I respect more.
Oh, I see.
More.
No, but I it's fine with me.
Still don't like it.
Okay, so here's my point. That was 2+ years ago, and it was an absolute avalanche of hatred of everything I am, including, you know, my face, my mannerisms, my voice, you know, but it was all sort of like, I've made some controversial arguments in my life, right?
Sure,
right?
We all have.
Really, but super controversial.
Sure.
Yet that's the thing that really pisses off people more than anything. At least
that's true.
Audience.
Yeah.
Now, I don't quite get it.
It's like, not like slavery wasn't that bad.
So I'm calling into question reality. That's what freaks you out, exactly. But yeah. I have these arguments about slaves being more free than whites and prostitutes being the first feminists and on and on, right? The mafia being heroes.
Yeah.
But when I call into question something like gender being a social construct or reality being real, they lose their fucking minds and call me names.
Right.
They call me names, Michael. They call me pussy and fag and cuck and stupid and idiot. And like, it goes on and on and on. They can't get enough of it, of hating me just because of that. No one ever mentions my shit about slavery.
Yeah.
So what is it about your audience and Joe Rogan's audience that just sets them off?
They're in touch with they're in touch with reality.
Are they? Tell me about
They
this.
Know eternal truth when they see it.
Do they? Do they?
Well, that's what the data indicates.
That's right. They know. They know that I'm a fag.
Look at this fag.
They know for sure that I'm a pussy.
Look at this pussy fag.
It's just obviously true that I'm a moron who knows. What was it? I should talk about things I know about.
Yeah.
What was this? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
But in all fairness, you're a history professor, right?
Correct.
You're not a postmodernist professor.
Yeah, sort of, I guess. Yeah, sure. No,
but your core competency is history.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Same with Michel Foucault. He was a historian.
Is that true?
Absolutely, okay. Yeah. His books are basically history books.
Well, it's also like Noam Chomsky. He's a linguist. That's where his forte is.
It's like he's not allowed to write about foreign policy. You know,
no, I'm not shouldn't. He's
really?
Not allowed. Shouldn't.
Is that true? You think so? You think Noam Chomsky should?
No, I think this person is saying shouldn't.
Yeah. Right. But it's not about the funny thing is they probably think that I'm ignorant of science and that's why I shouldn't be. Yeah. Or that's, of course, irrelevant to the question.
Right.
Yeah. You don't need any knowledge of science to have a postmodern critique of it, or to talk about postmodernism, whether you like it or not, right? Yeah. So, anyway, well, hello, fans of Michael Malice. Some of you do like me. I know this because you keep asking me to have Michael on my show, and you keep asking for me to be on Michael's show. So there's some Venn diagram here. There's some overlap of people who actually like me. You know. Well, yeah, but you before I was on your show, you said that people don't like me because I'm smug. Is that what it is? Well,
those are the comments. You get that a lot, I'm sure.
Oh, well, sometimes. Yeah, again, this audience. It's this particular audience.
Wait, you didn't get that from Joe? I think you get even more from Joe.
Oh, I got like 10 million of
them. Yeah.
Maybe 5 million.
Yeah.
But do you think I'm smug?
No. I think you are unaware of your affect.
Hmm. What is my affect?
Like sometimes you sit there smirking and it makes you come off as pompous when you're not going for it.
Mm. What do you think I'm going for?
Amiable and engaged.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. This interview will be about me.
You know, okay.
I'm here to talk about me.
Sure.
I just brought you here.
I know that dance.
To help. Yeah, no. Michael has a book out.
I do.
Michael has a book out. It's been out for just 2 months. It's hot off the presses.
It is.
Everybody's talking about it. Honestly, yeah. Like at least in my world.
Is that true?
A lot of people are, sure, yeah.
Oh, cool.
And this is one of the reasons people have said, when you're in New York, you got to have Malice on the show. But I was going to, anyway, because I knew the book was coming out, and this is a very important book, not the least of which is because I'm in the book, referenced. I think two whole pages you give to me.
Yeah,
and you say nice things about me.
Facts.
You don't say I'm smug. You don't call me a fag. I don't think, do you?
Well, it's implied.
Is it? Oh, is it? Yeah. That's good. And it's about what you call the new right. Now, when you were on my show last time, I got into a big argument about this with you before the book was even published. But now that it's published and I've had a chance to read it, I can actually come back at you. So you do write about Jared Taylor, this guy I asked about.
Absolutely.
And last time I asked you, you refused to comment on what Jared Taylor thinks.
Correct.
So are you now prepared, now that you've written a book about him and others, to tell us what Jared Taylor thinks?
No, I would answer the questions the same way because you're being very specific.
I see.
And I think it's, and I would hope you would agree, or people listening would agree, that when you're dealing with someone who... that is his core competency, and the only issue he cares about is, you know, race and race relations and you know, white nationalism, that when you're asking, you know, very hair-splitting questions, that it is important for that person who's written for 30 years to speak for themselves. So I did not have those answers then. I don't have them now.
But you quote him.
I do, right. I have some answers, but in terms of like, well, you know, because you were being like the Talmud. You know, when I had to study Talmud a little bit briefly, for those who don't know, so basically Jews have, how many, there are a certain number of laws in the Old Testament they have to follow, right?
A lot.
It's over 100.
Incredible number.
Maybe it's 300.
And none of them make sense.
Sure. Some of them
And they're all sense. A pain in the ass. To follow. That's so the point of them.
The Talmud
right.
is, and this is why, you know, I would say why Jews go into law so much, is a hair-splitting analysis of what these laws are. So, for example, for Passover, you have to go through your house and make sure there's no crumbs in the house, right, to be sanctified. What if you see a white mouse grab a crumb, crust, bread crust, and run into the wall? Does your house still count as sanctified? Okay. What if a white mouse carries a crust into the wall, and then you see a black mouse running out of the house with a crust? Does that count? So it's really this kind of mind-numbing, and it goes into every one of these laws, like stealing. Okay, you can't steal. This is the one I had to learn. What if something, you're on the floor, you see something on the sidewalk, is it stealing to pick it up? What if it's something that's small but expensive, like sesame seeds? What if it's something that's big but cheap, like pomegranates? When is it stealing, when is it abandoned, right? So when you're asking about Jared Taylor being like, well, would this person be allowed in the ethnostate? I have the Old Testament Jared Taylor, I don't have the Talmud version of Jared Taylor.
So,
and by the way, one of the greatest Jared Taylor moments, and I have not seen this, but I'm only hearing this secondhand, was my understanding that he was having a discussion with Richard Spencer, and Richard Spencer was saying, isn't it true that all of progressivism is a function of the Talmud? And Jared Taylor's like, what? No, what? Like,
what?
He couldn't even wrap his head around it. But you see this a lot in anti-Semitic alt-right circles, that the Talmud is the basis of progressivism.
So the Talmud is the problem, but the Torah is fine for them?
Because the Talmud has a lot of anti-Christian stuff, you know, being a function. And the thing is, no Jew, very, very, very few Jews are familiar with the Talmud because it's not even written in Hebrew, it's in Aramaic.
Right. Mm-hmm.
The idea that John Stewart and Chuck Schumer are Talmudic scholars is an absurdity. Or even that they're reading the Old Testament, let alone that. So it's just very interesting to see that, like, well, this rabbi that neither of us ever heard of said this thing, so therefore X, Y, and Z. It's like, okay.
So my questions were like the Talmud?
Yeah.
Because
because they were extremely specific about what in Jared Taylor's, you know, white nationalist America, would this guy be allowed in? That's like, I don't know.
Okay, that's right.
And I still don't know.
I was asking for the rules. And of the new right or the alt-right or Jared Taylor's thinking. And that's similar to all the rules of the ancient Jews, basically.
Sure.
You're right. And you don't know all of them, even though you're Jewish. Because it's a very tedious religion.
It's very specific.
Can we talk about this for a second?
Sure.
So Judaism, pain in the ass, just as a religion. Of the big three religions, definitely my least favorite. In terms of practice.
Well, I think blowing yourself up is pretty bad practice.
Oh, I'm not into any of the three, although Islam is definitely the preferred one. I mean, that's the one I would choose, for sure, because you can take vengeance on your enemies. There's sex allowed, at least in certain circumstances.
Having sex with your wife is the greatest thing you can do under Judaism.
The Old Testament. I mean, sure, they're all about procreation, but it's all just genealogy.
No,
so and so begat.
You want to be fucking your wife? That nothing makes God happier than fucking your wife.
Where does it say that
in the Talmud?
Oh, in the Talmud.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, then I like the Talmud. Then thank you for the compliment. Okay. Now that I'm Talmudic. I'm not a scholar. I'm just Talmudic in myself, I guess. Well, apparently,
the fact that you're not a scholar is pretty clear.
That's right. Thank you very much.
We've acknowledged at the beginning of the
interview. We know that. At least your fans know that. Yeah. They are sure, absolutely sure that is true.
In all fairness, they are losers and haters, but it's not their fault because they're born fucked up.
You just said some really not nice things about your own fans.
They know. It's a Trump quote. Did you not see that?
This is what you do to your fans?
Yeah. Well,
people pay money to support you and listen to you all the time, and they worship you and change their lives according to you and change their minds according to what you think. You call them losers
and haters.
Wow. And haters in public.
I was a third of the way through getting a signed copy of one of Emma Goldman's books, Spite Funded, by the fans, and it turns out someone had bought it.
Oh.
So it was very sad.
Okay. So let's talk about your book.
Yeah, I'm just finding that quote.
Oh, the Emma Goldman quote?
Oh, look at these quotes. Oh, you took notes, this question marks.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, here, this is the Trump quote.
He's looking at the book.
This is that Trump quote I was referencing.
Right there, You're looking at, he's actually looking at a copy that I was using, yes, to take notes. See, it proves that I read your goddamn book.
But look
book.
At the first quote at the very beginning of the chapter.
Every time I speak of the haters and losers, I do so with great love and affection. They cannot help the fact that they were born fucked up.
That's a real Trump tweet.
Donald J. Trump.
Yeah.
When did he say that?
Before he was president, 2014, 2012.
Because he doesn't use the word fuck anymore.
Yeah. He just said bullshit this week.
Did he?
That was a shock.
Good for him.
Yeah.
You know, he really is changing the game.
Yeah.
And I'm proud of him for that. And I kind of mean that. So, the book's out. It's a survey of what you call the new right.
Yeah.
This sort of new cultural movement, I suppose you could say.
Sure.
Right? That's fair.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And it is really important, I think, because this has been called the new right. This movement you're describing has been called the threat to Western civilization, the mortal threat posed to all non-white, you know.
If you look at the library
marginalized
system,
people.
If you look at the library system, I'm sure you could find it someplace still online. The editor had written a blurb for the book description. And he said, an in-depth look at the new right, which some consider to be a mortal threat to our democracy. That was the first sentence.
Oh, it was mortal. I got the word right.
Chapter 4 of this book is called The Case Against Democracy. And I just saw that. I'm like, the spurgout that as a consequence of this could not be described. So I had to rewrite that, but it was just like, holy shit. Yeah.
Okay. So you do make
get this at all.
You make an argument against democracy. We'll get to that.
Whole chapter.
Second,
yeah.
Which would be a threat to Western civilization, wouldn't it?
What?
Being against democracy.
I guess. Yeah. In certain aspects of it. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, aren't you? You're kind of opposed to Western civilization as it is now currently constituted.
Yes. I'm opposed to aspects of it. Of course.
So you are a radical. If you had your way.
Of course I'm a radical.
You would be a real threat to what all those people hold dear.
I have written articles advocating the dissolution of the United States. I'm against the Constitution. I am that foreign immigrant threat that people warned about.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And you hang out and you are Nazi adjacent.
Well, you mean because Russia?
Like adjacent. Like, you know people who know people.
No, I know Nazis.
Yeah, so you are adjacent to Nazis. Yeah, you talk to them. You said this in the book in the first few pages.
Of course, yes.
You're a New York Jew who hangs out with Nazis.
Not hangs out with.
You know them.
Yeah.
And you talk to them.
Yeah.
And you don't yell at them.
What's the point of yelling? I'm not a yeller.
Right.
And even when I'm angry, I'm not a yeller.
And here's the thing, Mike.
I'm cold.
But here's the goddamn problem, man. You know what you're supposed to do? You're supposed to say something about how bad they are. You're supposed to moralize against them, and you don't.
Why would I lie?
What do you mean? They're not bad? Nazis are not bad? Do I need to... What?
Yeah.
Do you know anything about history?
Hitler built the Berlin Wall. And he had the blueprints in his book, Mein Kampf, which means Mein Wall.
You don't say they're bad. I mean it. This is the this is the entire problem that people have with you.
This actually has not been a complaint.
I mean, like liberals. This is the entire problem, is that you don't, I know it's true for me. It's because I don't moralize against Nazis or any other political ideology, generally speaking. When I discuss people like Trump or fascists, actual fascists or Nazis, like the Confederates and stuff who were at Charlottesville with you, by the way.
Absolutely.
I don't moralize, and that drives people crazy. Because you're required, right, in our culture to always insert some moral claim, negative moral claim against people like that.
I must not be important or something else enough, because I have not gotten, I was expecting that. I've had Faith Goldie on my show. I've had Pax Dickinson, who's one of the organizers of Charlottesville, like is my third guest on You're Welcome when it was on Compound Media. That is not a criticism. The only time I get that criticism is if I have a kind of what can be construed in a very broad sense as a pro-Trump tweet, and then you're called a Nazi and all this other stuff. But in terms of talking to actual Nazis, I have not gotten that, which is very, I guess, makes sense in one context.
Yeah, it says that people don't actually care. One, right?
Correct.
They actually deep inside know that there are only about 25 Nazis in this country, and they all live in trailer parks.
And they also
and have no political power.
Understand correctly that who is a much bigger threat? Someone who's, let's suppose, a third Nazi and is president, or someone who's full-blown Nazi and is some random person?
Exactly.
But that's true.
What's true?
I mean, the president has far more power than a regular person, so he is more of a threat.
Sure, of course.
No matter who the president is.
But he's not a Nazi.
Correct.
This one, he's got all kinds of problems, but he ain't a Nazi.
Right.
Ask a Nazi what they think of him, right?
Well, but CNN just did. Richard Spencer he's not a Nazi, but he was just on.
It's close enough.
He was pontificating on being disappointed by Trump, and the blowback was enormous.
Huh, interesting.
To CNN, yeah.
All right, back to you. This show is not about me, and it's not about Donald Trump. It's about you and this book.
And the haters and the losers.
And the haters and losers who love you.
It's not their fault.
I want to talk about your story in regards to the new right.
Sure.
So you tell kind of your own story, with the new right, and it begins in 2011, doesn't it? You go to a meeting, I think, right? You tell the story in the book about going to a meeting of what would become known as an alt-right kind of an organization,
sure.
Right? So just, what was the story? How did you get there? Why did you go there?
Well, I mean, you're talking to the person who, when he finally had a little bit of coin in his pocket, decided to, for his first trip, go to North Korea. So I will always go to the weird places, the fringe places, well, to an extent. Because, you know, coming from anarchist circles, I saw that many of my friends were drifting to what was at the time called NRX, neo-reaction. And which I found any kind of heretical thought, as you as well, I find extremely interesting, because there is this argument that the corporate press makes that people on the fringe who are marginalized, which is accurate, they're marginalized, are therefore dumb or crazy. And you, and one of your big epiphanies, and which I agree with, and I talk about this extensively in the book, is that the people in the margins is where innovation goes. And when you are a basic bitch, idiocy and insanity and innovation look identical to you, because they're equidistant from you. You don't know which side of the bell curve you're looking at. They're just, you know, you're standing inside of a circle, the center of a circle. And from talking to these types online, I found them to be not only extremely intelligent, but more importantly, extremely informed. So they would get fixated on certain issues, as you know, you and I and other people do, but even more than you and I do, and they will do the deep dives, they will do the research, they will talk at length about these historical figures, and I love that. I'm a hipster, so I love that band No One's Heard of, so they'll be like, oh, this historical person, blah, blah, blah. You know, people talk about Nietzsche, I'm the one who owns the first edition of Max Stirner's book from 1841. So, you know, obviously, we got invited to the steak dinner. I went. It was very, very interesting, because this was a room where everyone was indisputably a thought criminal. Everyone, if their views were known at their job, would, if not get fired, would really have a problem, would have a problem with their social relations. And I'm like, all right, let me see what this is about. It was very cerebral. The conversations were fascinating. It's great for me, just like with North Korea and other stuff, when people feel comfortable dropping the mask and presenting their views as they actually stand. And it's the thing that, you know, the press wants to reduce everything to kind of pablum, these bite-sized thoughts, and everything be on the level of Big Bang Theory in terms of ideology. And they would like it to be, oh, you know, it's just a room full of people saying, I don't like black people. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no,
it was actually a room full of people say they didn't like Jewish people.
Well, they wouldn't say they didn't like.
Didn't you have a big run-in with some anti-Semites there?
No. So what I do, whenever I meet someone, and I don't do this anymore now that I'm so extremely famous, what I used to do is when I would meet people, I would make a marginally offensive statement upon meeting them as a means to immediately gauge their reaction and cut and get a measure of them as a human being, because their reaction would be visceral. And what I knew in this room there would be many anti-Semites, and not, I'm not using that term loosely. So when we went on the table announcing ourselves, I said, I'm Michael Malice, and I'm here from ZOG, which they call Zionist-Owned Government or Zionist-Occupied Government. That's their acronym, which is a funny acronym because it sounds like a Superman.
Which is an old stereotype sort of conspiracy theory about Jews, right?
I don't like using the word conspiracy theory because conspiracy theory is a term used by the corporate press to dismiss thought preemptively.
Okay, but ZOG is a conspiracy theory, isn't it? It's a belief that there's an international organization of Jews that are controlling the world or trying to control the world.
I'll say belief. Because to me, if I said, call something
a conspiracy belief.
If I say something a conspiracy theory, that probably means it's true.
Okay.
Because as I point out in the book, Kevin Spacey, Jeff Epstein, Bill Cosby, Harvey Weinstein, these were all conspiracies. It was very known that these men were doing these things. Everyone looked the other way. Mm-hmm. The Constitution was a conspiracy. Mm-hmm. The founding fathers were tasked to remake the Articles of Confederation. They get to Philadelphia, lock the door, look over their shoulder, go, we're throwing that shit in the trash, right? And they're like, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And they swore themselves to secrecy. It was absolutely a conspiracy.
Pretty much every war is a conspiracy?
Right. So people don't like that word because it thinks nefarious and villains, but it's used to dismiss ideas that are not palatable in the mainstream. So again, I said that I'm here from representing ZOG, and half the room laughed, which was their visceral reaction. So I knew that even if they're anti-Semites, they'd at least be people I could have a conversation with, and half just sat there, you know, you could either, what's he doing here? Mm-hmm. Or like, oh, you think that's funny, blah, 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 blah. He's, you know, he's kind of infiltrated us. So it was very quickly, I did the scan of the room and I knew to some extent what was up.
So, okay, you take pains in the book to, I would say, distance yourself from racism, to identify really as an anti-racist in many cases. You tell us a story about a friend of yours who's a West Indian woman who is discriminated against when she goes into restaurants.
Yeah, I am an anti. I don't use that
You take
term.
Her side in that. And you
it's
sort
not
of,
even taking her side. Well, it's disgusting to me that everything has to be political. Hmm. And there's nothing political to say that, you know, her dad was a veteran. Hmm. And she just told me how whenever they would go to a restaurant, she would have to wonder if they're going to be seated in the back or they're going to get bad service because, as she's a waitress, black people tend to tip less. And every time she has to wonder, I just want dinner with my dad. And for me to just say, that sucks. And that's terrible. This is not a broad political statement. It's just an acknowledgement that this is not right. And if we could have a magic wand, it should go away. The idea that this has, and then people exploit that for political purposes. I'm just saying, just in terms of this, it shouldn't take anything to be like, have some empathy and be upset by it.
Okay. So now you define the new right in this book.
Yeah.
Very specifically.
Yes, I do.
And here it is.
Yes.
You say, it is a loosely connected group of individuals united by their opposition to progressivism, which they perceive to be a thinly veiled fundamentalist religion dedicated to egalitarian principles and intent on totalitarian world domination via globalist hegemony. So that...
You know, I rattled that off the top of my head. I'm not even kidding.
Yeah. Well, I think that's pretty much what you said to me on the last time you were on the show, how you defined it. You know, the wording's a little strong, but I
strong
essentially share, you know, words like totalitarian, domination, hegemony. I mean, I agree with all this. And fundamentalist religion, yes. It's just that all the liberals listening, just stop listening.
I disagree.
Okay.
I think there's a very big, and I'll tell you the difference between what I call the evangelical left and liberals. And it's a thick line.
Oh, right on. Let's hear this.
It's a very thick line. This is not everyone on the left at all.
Okay.
You know perfectly well, and it's very unfortunate you see in social media, that everyone thinks the other side is a monolith. Mm-hmm. And the idea that the socialists didn't hate Harry Truman, you know, hated the communists. Mm-hmm. He went to war with them.
He sure did.
So don't tell me that, oh, it's all basically.
He killed a bunch of them.
Yeah, you're right. Right.
A whole lot of them.
Right. And he didn't, and gleefully.
Yeah, exactly.
So here is the criterion between what makes it a faith and what makes it a perspective. Thanksgiving dinner. You're there, you bring your friend who doesn't have any family, he's gay. Grandma's there, she makes some homophobic comments. Mm. If you're a leftist, or I would say the vast majority of gay people, you roll your eyes, you don't care. She's old, whatever, it's fine, grandma. Mm. If you are a member of the evangelical left, it is incumbent on you to sit there and educate her and wipe the sin from the face of the earth. And until she understands what she has done, you cannot let the matter rest. These are two, in my view, very different perspectives on the nature of the left and the nature of morality.
Okay, so now it sounds like you're talking about identity politics.
It's not exclusively identity politics, but largely, yeah.
Well, so Harry Truman was a progressive. He was bent on establishing a globalist hegemony.
Oh, absolutely.
He was intent, I don't know about totalitarian, but he was certainly intent on the United States dominating the world, for sure.
Totalitarian in the sense that it has to permeate every aspect of culture.
Okay, so now the progressives, like Harry Truman, like John F. Kennedy, you know, those, you sort of singled them out. You made them different than these current progressives.
I don't think Harry Truman is as much of a progressive as, let's say, Woodrow Wilson.
Okay.
Harry Truman was, you know, he's in many ways economically far to the left of Bernie Sanders, but in terms of culturally, and he wasn't a jihadi like Woodrow Wilson was.
Okay.
Would you disagree with that?
I would disagree with that, yeah. He was very much a jihadi. He was very much interested in Pax Americana, if anything, more so than what Wilson. He did more, in fact, certainly,
sure,
to establish United States global hegemony.
No, he didn't do more, because Woodrow Wilson is the one who established it. But the point is, Woodrow Wilson genuinely thought he was sent here by God to bring this messianic kind of kingdom.
So did Truman.
I don't think Harry Truman thought he was a child of destiny the way Woodrow Wilson did.
Okay. Not that important a discussion to have right now.
Okay.
But everyone would agree, and I'm sure you would too, that both of them were bent on, as I said, expanding the American empire.
100%.
Fully. Across
100%.
The globe. Okay. So now then, why aren't they included in this? Why are they not progressives?
Well, they're dead. This is the truth. I'm talking, okay. This is a contemporary movement.
Okay. So this is the left now you're talking about.
And certain aspects of the left.
One wing of the left, right?
Correct.
Which is the wing that would yell at your grandmother for saying something homophobic
at their own grandmother.
Their own grandmother at Thanksgiving,
yes.
Right.
Yes.
Those people. And you're saying that a lot of people on the left, including liberals, people we would call liberals, sort of mainstream liberals, would not do that. They would
Correct.
Be less interested in yelling
Correct.
At grandma for the homophobic remark.
Correct.
Okay, so again, this sounds like identity politics you're attacking, not progressivism per se.
Okay.
Okay, well, what about the other parts of progressivism besides the stuff about race and gender and sexuality?
What other parts of
the economic program of progressivism?
Many members of the New Right have no problem with the economic stuff.
Uh-huh.
They are welfare state people. I'm all for welfare as long as it's my own. This budget stuff, balanced budget, you know, marginal tax cuts, they regard as kind of boomer conservative thinking. This is not, it's very, very, very much focused on culture.
Mm-hmm.
The Breitbart concept of politics being downstream of culture, they almost never talk about, because they're not even talking that much about Washington.
Right. So they're interested in culture. They're interested in race.
Some of them are, yeah.
Many are.
The alt-right are, yeah.
The alt-right, yes.
Yeah, that's
okay.
The subset
of the
race.
Which is a subset of the new right.
Correct.
Okay, your book is about the new right.
Right.
And the new right, according to you, includes everybody under this banner, right? The
right.
People who are opposed to progressivism as you define it.
Yes.
Which, according to you, includes me and you.
We're progressives?
No, sorry, the critics of this. The new right includes me, according to you.
Yes, sir? It's up to you.
Well, I thought you said yes, and I'm in the book.
Just because you're in the book doesn't mean you remember this.
Okay,
just,
do you think I'm a member of the new right?
No.
New right? Oh, why not?
Because you're not driven by your opposition to progressivism. If you just disagree with my definition, then you're not going to be a member.
No, I said I agree, generally speaking. I just, the wording I wouldn't use.
I would never tell anyone how they identify politically. I think that's...
Why'd you put me in your book?
What?
Why'd you put me in your book? If I'm not a member of the new right.
I put divine in the book.
I'm not
a member of the new right.
Okay. Just to illustrate a point.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not challenging. I'm everything's fine.
Wait, that doesn't make any sense. You think just because I mentioned some of the book, they're by implication a member of the new right?
Well, you spend two pages discussing my ideas, which is great. I'm not complaining. I'm just saying you do associate me, do you not, with the new right?
No.
Oh,
there's
okay.
Not even an implication.
I mean, I did ask you this flatly once upon a time, and
wait
you said yes.
Wait, hold on. In the context of this book, mm-hmm. just because I have two pages discussing your idea, I discuss Hot Wheels. Do you think Hot Wheels is a member of the new right?
Could be.
Could be.
Have you looked carefully? They do have a Confederate flag on one of them.
Who does?
The Hot Wheels cars.
Hot Wheels is the guy in the
General
wheelchair
Lee.
Who runs.
There was a General Lee Hot Wheels. Okay, Hot so Wheels you're
is,
busted.
Okay, Hot Wheels is the guy who runs 8chan, the guy in the wheelchair.
Oh, is the person?
Yes.
Okay.
So I don't know that he. I talk about his ideas. He's well, progenics.
I'm a very aggressive critic opponent of progressivism, and I also generally agree with your characterization of progressivism.
Okay. So if you want to be, in the
I think
right, that's fine.
I do belong.
Okay.
Under that. Definition.
And you are a loser and a hater.
Some people have said.
It's
yes.
not your fault.
Only your fans.
It's not your fault.
Only your fans.
And Rogan's fans.
I've heard our losers and haters. They think that.
Well, it's not their fault.
No, but seriously. So let's get down to this. I mean,
I'm
then
not.
Then you're not either?
I'm not someone who finds. I used to hate this argument, and now I subscribe to it. I hate the use of labeling individuals. I'm much more interested in ideas because very frequently, as I'm sure everyone listening to this has seen, people ascribe labels in order to preemptively dismiss individuals. It's like, oh, you're a Trump voter. Oh, you're a Hillary person. I don't need to hear anything else you have to say. So if you want to call yourself new right, that's fine. If you don't want to, that's fine. The only label I will ascribe to myself is anarchist. If people want to put me whatever camp they want, that's Trump, degenerate, it's fine.
Okay. So
you want to call me a loser, a hater, a fag, a cuck? That's fine too.
So
I've been called all those things.
New Yorker, Jewish, immigrant.
Sure.
Russian immigrant.
Correct.
And you are not a member of the New Right. You were nonetheless attracted to something about it because you said they were, what'd you call them? Thought criminals. You're attracted to thought criminals.
I am a thought criminal.
That's why you went to that meeting, because it was fascinating to be among thought criminals.
It's true.
Of any kind. And you're ecumenical in your attraction to thought criminals. Am I right?
That's sure. Absolutely.
So like hardcore left-wing thought criminals you would also be attracted to?
I mean, I'm reading Emma Goldman's a hero of mine. Absolutely.
There you go. So in 2011, you go to this meeting of full of anti-Semites and others who, you know.
It wasn't largely anti-Semitic.
There were plenty though, right?
There were some, yeah.
Yeah. And so.
I wouldn't say it was predominantly anti-Semitic.
Okay. But there were some there, and you don't find many anti-Semites in many New York meetings of any kind.
That's a lie.
Oh, really? Tell me more.
Are you fucking kidding me?
I'm serious. Like,
you don't think anti-Semitism is prominent in New York City?
I've never seen it, honestly. Honestly. I'm curious to know. I'm not pretending. I don't know. I've never been around it. In this city, it's hard to be anti-Semitic.
In this city, it's hard not to be.
Well, tell me more. I mean, well, I will say this. All of the anti-Semitic jokes I've ever heard have come from Jews, mostly New York Jews. Including you, by the way.
Sure.
So that's the anti-Semitism I've seen is from Jews, in particular,
well,
New York Jews.
If you're,
I've never seen any or heard any, I can't think of any anti-Semitic comments I've ever heard in New York City from a non-Jew.
I think then you're not traveling these kind of rarefied circles. I think it's
for
pretty
sure.
common in those circles.
I'm not saying it doesn't exist. I'm just saying I've never heard it. And I lived
sure.
there for 17 years and I've been here many, many times since then.
Yeah, but you're not talking to those types.
Yeah, I'm talking to Jews.
Right.
Right, who make all the anti-Semitic jokes.
But they're not joking.
They hate themselves.
They don't hate themselves.
They hate Jews.
Every movement, every scene is going to have wings, right?
Yep.
So my grandmother warned me mm-hmm. when my first landlord out of college was going to be Hasidic. She's like, don't you do it. They're going to be a pain in the ass.
Mm-hmm.
So this is not, this is very common within, and of course you, in your work, you know this perfectly well with the immigration,
sure.
how the German Jews came over. They're like, we're not letting those Eastern Europeans in here. They're not like us.
I'm talking about a collection, like more than one anti-Semite in a room at the same time. I mean, that doesn't happen very often in this city, does it?
I think it does.
Where
but
they
not
openly talk about?
Not openly. No,
yeah.
no. But okay. there's all this. They never suffer open. It's always code words.
It's an unusual scene, right? It was kind of like a.
But they weren't in this meeting that you're fixated on. It's not like they were sitting there talking anti-Semitism.
I'm not fixating on it. It's the beginning of the story. So you were at this meeting. There were some anti-Semites there. There were some racists there. Not
sure.
all of them, but it was
Absolutely.
There. And this is unusual. This is unusual in New York City in 2011.
Okay.
For there to be a, right, and that's why you're there. In
sure.
In large part, not entirely.
Sure.
Because these are thought crimes.
Sure.
Certainly in New York City, to be anti-Semitic and anti-black the way that these guys were.
Yes.
Those are thought crimes.
Right.
And you're attracted to that. Now, you went to the meeting, you hung out, you were impressed by their intelligence, and they are quite intelligent and quite learned, you said. They know stuff that
sure.
we don't know, even though you and I are fixated on many of these questions. They study it more deeply than we do, and I agree with you.
Yeah.
Then you stayed around, you hung around, you continued to hang out with these guys over the last several years, right?
Well, it's...
I don't mean making them friends, but you stayed in touch with them and you followed them.
And also, then you go down... Look, I just went down a rabbit hole with shaving soap and now I have 200 in my house, right? So you follow the tweets, you
yep.
follow the blogs. There's a whole little ecosystem that I was privy to.
So tell me about the ecosystem.
Well, what do you want to know?
So there's 4chan, there's Reddit. What did you find?
I mean, those are it's like, oh, you like music? You heard like the Beatles and Rolling Stones. Those are the very public faces, sure. Right? Yeah. There are many kind of darker places to go.
Corners, rabbit holes.
Rabbit holes, corners, so on and so forth. Thinkers, you know, ideas.
Rat holes, some might say.
They love Thomas Carlyle, you know, that kind of stuff. And just watching, it was also fascinating to watch for me as someone who's partly is this a function of me being someone who's grown up with a huge love of zoology, is what, because they often talk about signaling, right? Virtue signaling is the one most people are familiar with, but the camouflage that they would use to communicate with one another and also to pass in mainstream culture. And then progressivism, the kind of white blood cells, started acting up, and there were always articles now like, okay, translating their code to mainstream audiences.
Right. So who are the big players here? We got Mencius Moldbug, right?
Mencius Moldbug, sure.
Big intellectual, founder in some ways of this movement.
Of NRX. Well, he's not really someone who's fixated on race at all.
Right.
He's much more fixated on social power dynamics. How is it that progressivism has so thoroughly dominated and permeated and completely blue-pilled this nation?
Right. And he came up with this great metaphor of the cathedral.
Is it a metaphor?
Or is it an analogy?
Or is it a fact?
Oh, well, it could be all three.
I don't regard it as a metaphor.
Okay, so his discourse about the cathedral, yeah, just like explain that. It's something that I actually use, but I've never actually read him, so I've only heard other people talk about it, but I thought it was a good way to describe sort of what's happened in this country and in Northern Europe in the last 100 or so years.
Yeah, I always took it as literal, mm-hmm. Not in terms of it being a literal physical building that is a cathedral, mm-hmm. but in terms of it being a literal, organized, systemic, religious movement that has permeated every aspect of American culture. So
sounds like a conspiracy belief.
It's not a conspiracy if it's the dominant ideology, right? Isn't conspiracy by definition a small subset?
Right.
So that's his whole point. Like there's the metaphor. This is a metaphor or an analogy. I never get those straight, or simile, wherein two fish are in a river and one says, oh, the water is warm today. And the other one goes, what's water, right? That we're oblivious mm-hmm. to the environment in which we find ourselves. So his point is what the cathedral has done is slightly over a century mm-hmm. has systematically created this worldview and culture and discourse wherein progressivism is regarded as basically the essential starting point and ending point, and all discussion has to take place within the purview of progressive thought and premises.
Awesome. Now let me play devil's advocate, okay?
Okay.
This is what most, I think, liberals would say back to you. What are you talking about, Malice? Have you not been to Alabama? It's not progressive down there. It's full of Christian conservatives.
Right. So, so the point is,
did you not pay attention to the election? Did you see all those people voting for Trump? Do you think those are progressives, Michael Malice?
As you
fag?
As you faggot, cuck, loser, hater. One of the people who I call the godfather.
But it's a reasonable objection to what you're saying, right?
No. Okay. It is a common objection. It's not
common.
A reasonable objection.
Okay,
because very, you know, as everyone listening to this understands perfectly well, that person who is in Alabama is not in any sense in a position to define our culture. As in 2016, and again, Trump and the new right are not synonymous, but in 2016, one of the big arguments against Trump, which we all heard very frequently, was every single CEO is united against him. All these organizations, like it was like the Harvard Republicans and then this like Explorers Club, National Geographic. I'm getting the names wrong, but it's like in all their history, they've never endorsed a presidential candidate. They're endorsing Hillary Clinton, blah, blah, blah. So their perspective was that this is so bad that even these various disparate groups are finding unanimity in opposition, whereas the Moldbug approach is, no, this demonstrates that the cathedral is permeated even in things that are ostensibly different. And Jim Goad, who I call the godfather of the new right, who I'm sure you've had on him on his show.
Love Jim.
Great guy, very bright guy.
Yep.
The point he made,
that is not an endorsement of Jim Goad or anything he has ever said. I just enjoy the person.
You're going to endorse the next thing I'm going to say, because this is pure Thad Russell thinking, which is that all the explicit racist stereotypes against poor blacks, particularly in the South, overnight were applied to poor whites without batting an eye by the same exact people. They're inbred, barefoot,
lazy,
stupid, right?
Oversexed.
all verbatim
shiftless,
eating their fried chicken, eating their disgusting food.
They weren't accused of having good rhythm, though.
Sure,
I will say that.
Well, no, they have the country music.
Well, I know
it's
but,
a different kind. Yeah,
the progressives didn't talk about how the crackers who voted for Trump were good dancers,
right?
As I recall,
but. So this is why I often say progressivism is domesticated imperialism. Instead of it being we're going to save, you know, India, the white man's burden, now we have to save these degenerate whites from themselves. It's the same exact idea and the same exact people.
Well, I'm glad I'm not a part of the new right anymore. I thought I was, according to you. And I'm glad that you're not either, because, you know, they have some good critiques, but Jesus, they just seem to be full of racists and monarchists. This is the other thing they're into, right? And people don't get this. And maybe they're more into monarchy than they are into hating black people. Is this right? You said that was kind of an underlying theme for a lot of people on the alt-right.
So when you have a group that is the only thing they have in common is who they're opposed to, this is what happened in with Brexit in the UK. So you had a 53% majority that said, okay, we want Brexit. Right. Then Theresa May goes to the EU and she goes, OK, let's figure out what this is going to look like. It's that you have to go. I want a divorce. OK, what's this divorce going to look like? There were 7 or 8 bills in Parliament. None of them could get a working majority as to what Brexit would look like. So while there is an agreement, this is what progressivism is and this is how it needs to be destroyed. OK, what are you going to do next? You're all over the map. So it's either, it could be white nationalism, it could be monarchism, it could be anarchism, it could be techno-anarchism. That's what's hilarious.
Okay.
And the corporate press, which have you believe, because their definition of racism is that which is not progressive, that these people are all not just racist, but specifically the Klan. And as you know, and as anyone with a bare knowledge of history knows, the Klan is a specific organization with specific geographical location, with specific ideology. And to basically say that the Klan is the same thing as, you know, just someone who's a monarchist is bonkers.
Okay, so why so much interest in monarchy, right? In particular, they want the Stuarts to return, is that right?
Yeah, I had this fun conversation with a friend of mine. And when I was coming upon this scene, and I said, well, what's their answer? Okay, this is what they hate. Okay, what are they going to put in their place? And he goes, well, you know, they want to restore the Stuarts. And I thought, okay, this is Rudy Giuliani, you know, law and order, republicanism. And I go, well, who would be these Stuarts? He goes, oh, no, not the Stuarts. The Stuarts. He goes, see, we anarchists are stupid and utopian and unrealistic with Bitcoin and all that stuff. The realistic answer is to restore the Stuart dynasty to America. But there's very few of those, the monarchists,
well,
to be fair.
But really?
It's fascinating.
But aren't they kind of the hardcore alt-right? Didn't alt-right sort of start that way as primarily monarchists?
It wasn't
like Moldbug is a monarchist, right?
I think Moldbug is more of a military coup guy.
Oh, Jesus.
And
I can't keep track anymore. I need a book to be a guide to this whole thing. Do you know of any?
No.
Oh.
Yeah, it's called A Kill All Normies.
Oh, oops. Your competitor.
Yeah,
don't mention that book.
It's in paperback.
It's in paperback.
This is in hardcover.
Another guest on Unregistered. In fact, I interviewed both of you on the same day.
Yeah.
That's right. That's Angela Nagel we're talking about.
And
she also has
a
book about the alt-right.
Yeah.
Okay. So you don't have any explanation for why they're attracted to monarchy?
Oh, sure I do.
Oh, okay.
So one of the big aspects of what, one things people who I find absurd on the internet say, right-wing and left-wing distinctions don't make sense anymore, blah, blah, blah. It's like, okay, that's a cool story, bro. There are terms that are used and are used by many people, and maybe you don't agree with those terms, but those terms do have some utility. And one of the big axes that you could define right versus left is, are you someone who wants equality and egalitarian, or are you someone who regards hierarchy as either inevitable or even desirable? So the ones who are hard right, and I don't like saying far right, are the ones who are like, all right, you're going to have hierarchy, you should embrace hierarchy, and one of these ways that hierarchy can be recognized and implemented is monarchism. And their argument for monarchism is, a king who is there for a long time, kind of like the Supreme Court, is not going to be subject to the mob and the masses, and he will do the right thing for his country, you know, so on and so forth. So the arguments for it are not as crazy as people would think. The idea that we get to there from here is, to me, really weird.
There are a bunch of postmodernists. You are too. So you keep sounding like Michel Foucault. So in some of Foucault's work,
are you calling me a fag cuck?
I know this is even worse. I'm sorry. Well, he was a fag, Michel Foucault, and he was not even proud of it. Well, he's kind of proud of it. Anyway, so he makes an argument, I think, in his books, that under what he calls, or what were pre-modern regimes, like monarchy, like in slaveholding regimes, the balance of power, the way the power was dispersed, was completely different, right? It was through the sword, it was through the dungeon, it was through direct coercive physical violence, right? That's how you kept the masses, the peasants or the slaves, in order.
Sure.
You cut off their heads, or you threw them in a hole and left them there, right? Then he said in the modern era, it was different. It was about managing psyches, basically.
Sure.
And bodies, yeah. And understanding and actually looking into the minds of people and understanding how they work, or trying to understand how they work, and then predicting how they would behave, and then doing things to control that behavior and manage it, right? Which you could call progressivism as a fact.
Sure.
In fact, and I think Foucault would not even argue with that. Now, here's the interesting thing. At times when he's describing these pre-modern regimes, which he calls the regime of blood.
That sounds hot.
I know. It's super hot. It gets hotter. He says, he gets cooler, in fact. He says, under those pre-modern regimes, he calls, there was this thing called the shade, where power couldn't see the people, right? Because the king, he would march into town with his knights and kill everybody or whatever, or torture them or threaten them, and then he'd leave. There were no spies. There was no surveillance left over. There was no NSA to look at anything. There was no means of understanding the people. Right. And so at that moment, Foucault suggests people were in the shade and could act more freely.
Yes.
And this includes the slaves. And this is what I write about. When the slave master turned his back in the fields, all the slaves put down their picks and hoes and they stopped working. Right. So I'm thinking here, all right, I live in a democracy. I'm not a huge fan of it. You know, it's not going my way very often. You know, the people vote, I don't vote, and the people vote against me more often than not. And they impose all sorts of things on me, like taxes and maybe going to war, et cetera, et cetera. And so I'm not a huge fan of that. And I'm thinking monarchy, you know, what's the alt-right got to offer here? Monarchy, there might at least be some shade from all the surveillance, all the hectoring, all the attention to me that I get in democracy, which is also a thing that the alt-right is reacting against, right? Everybody's terribly concerned what cis white men are thinking and doing, right? That's surveillance. It's a constant, they're on me all the time.
Yes.
I'm the focus of attention, people like me. Under a monarchy, they don't care as long as they don't rise up in rebellion against the king.
It's like, the closest analog in contemporary times would be Singapore.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Right.
Right. So Lee Kuan Yew, in many ways, was this kind of monarch figure, mm-hmm. right? He ruled Singapore with an iron fist. And even though it was socially very conservative, kind of like it was kind of Victorian in a sense, my understanding, where it's like, you can actually do all these things. I just don't want to know about it. Mm-hmm. Now, the one thing, drug laws, I know it's death penalty. But in terms of the gay stuff, it's like, you can have your gay bars and have your little, you know, Western expats go there. You're just not having your pride parade. So there is some analogs to what you're saying.
Right. In Southeast Asia, where they cut off the heads of drug dealers, though. So why did they do that? That's not out of Puritanism.
Well, no, it's not. It's more like the idea that having drugs is going to kind of, my understanding is it like infect the will, and it's going to be cause trouble for managing the culture.
The problem is that the semi-monarchs in Southeast Asia, they do have means of surveillance. There is no shade, or there's very little shade.
Sure.
Whereas, so I think I want to go straight back to the Stuart monarchy, right? Where they don't really know. They have no means of knowing what I do the 99%+ of the time, right? So that's why I kind of like monarchy. Well, there's a very clear hierarchy. Also, by the way, here's the reason I like monarchy, is that I don't have any responsibility for the society as a whole under monarchy.
Right.
The king does.
Correct.
It sucks to be the king. What did Mel Brooks say? You know, it's not fun to be the king or something like that. Yeah, I don't want responsibility. I don't want social responsibility. Progressives insist that I take it.
Correct.
Again, I'm just sounding more and more alt-right and fashy here, I guess.
Well, you are doing Hitler salute as we record this.
That's just saying hello to you.
Oh, well, you had your arm up for 20 minutes.
Yeah. Don't tell them that these things, man. You're the one with the haircut.
You're the one with the swastika tattoo.
Shut up, man. God damn it. And these Jews, they will come on your show and just say anything.
Why did you write a number on my arm when I came in here?
Because they run this city. You think just because you run this city, you can say whatever you want on any old podcast?
And control the weather.
All right, Michael. So listen, what do you think about monarchy as a New York Jew?
Well, how about I speak as myself and not on behalf of New York Jews? Is that okay?
Can I really? You're not going to let me just box you in consistently.
North Korea.
There you go. Really there's a monarchy.
And I'm not a fan.
Communist monarchy.
To put it mildly.
A communist racist monarchy, too.
North Korea is the most racist country in the world, yes.
People don't know that. Dude, can you explain that?
Sure. I talk about this very heavily in Dear Reader, but North Korea is the most homogenous country on Earth. They talk extensively and consistently. You know, you just mentioned they're communist. They no longer identify as communist. Mm. There are many ways that North Korea is far closer to specifically Nazi fascism. And they talk constantly about the purity of the Korean people and the Korean bloodline. They claim that Korea was the first government on Earth, first country on Earth, and that it is only Korea, the Korean people, that have maintained their bloodline pure since ancient times. Every other country has either intermingled through invasion or through being invaded other countries. We're the only ones. And the South, from their perspective, is not a separate country, but a region under the occupation of the U.S. imperialists. So that's why it's lowercase n and lowercase s in North and South Korea. And in fact, you know, there was one scene in my book, which I took from their literature, where I think some South Korean girl was going to marry an American or something like that. I don't remember the background. And the great leader, I think Kim Il-sung, says, "Not one drop of ink shall drop into the Han River." So, I mean, and in fact, when they go, and this has very disturbing consequences in real life, because if you have these starving women who cross the border into China and often are, you know, raped or sold into sexual slavery or something like that, if they make their way back to North Korea or if they're caught, they will be violently forced to abort if they were pregnant, because you're not going to mix Korean and Chinese blood.
I did not know that.
Yeah, and it's not just take this pill. It's like they're beaten until they miscarry. The levels of depravity of the North Korean government, no matter how much I talk about it, there's more layers to this onion.
Yeah. But good news is that meanwhile, they're being subverted every single day by people crossing that very river, or the Yalu River, right?
And the Tumen River.
With stuff on their back.
And they're being subverted by shit
mm-hmm.
TV,
yes.
Shitty South Korean music. It's the trash is what is going to save that country, just like it saved the Soviet Union. And I could not be more here for it. And I discuss this in the book as well. The best, and I know this is something you're talking about and work about. Mm-hmm. The best propaganda is Gossip Girl.
Yeah.
You know, you watch a show like Gossip Girl in a poor country and you're like, I want that.
Because?
Because, you know, the example I always use is you're in the 80s, you're in Russia, you've been taught dialectical materialism all your life and Marxism, and you think all that stuff's great. However, you turn on this show and the maid, who is a minority, which you're taught are treated very badly in America, to some extent correctly, has a fur coat and a car, and you are wiping your ass with literal newspaper. And it doesn't matter what ideology anyone has, I want what that oppressed maid has, mm-hmm. and she could have my Pravda, and she could wipe her ass with it all day long.
Yeah, I don't know how it's pronounced properly in Korean, but it's the Jeongmadong black market, right? And it's called the Jeongmadong generation.
Right.
It's this whole generation of North Koreans under, I guess, the age of 30, who are... they're smuggling in flash drives full of TV shows and porn, I think, and just big chunks of the internet.
Far less porn, because that's death penalty.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. But I know that a lot of people in North Korea are watching Western television, or South Korean television, which is sort of westernized in many ways. And they smuggle it literally over this river, the Yalu River in particular, which divides China from North Korea, right?
Which you could
walk across. Backpacks and barefoot across this river. I mean, that's, to me, the greatest symbol of freedom in this world that's going on right now.
And you hear all these people who are American captives in North Korea. They captured a few detainees, Kenneth Bay and some others. And the guards, you know, despite them being under surveillance, because no one in North Korea is by themselves, someone's always watching. You have the two guards reporting on each other, and they'll be like, "How big's your house? Hmm. Do you have a car?" I mean, they're extremely curious.
Sure.
And they don't even, like, when the guy's like, "Yeah, this is how much I make a year," they're like, "Okay, you're a lying imperialist," because the idea that someone's going to make $30,000 a year is unconscionable to them. It's just impossible. But I make this point many times. Truth is asymmetric. Hmm. If I sit down with you and I tell you 90 truths and 10 lies, I am a liar, even though 90% of the time I'm telling the truth. So very quickly, they come to realize, all right, we're being told things that we know are lies. So then you start to question. It's a domino effect. And it's the most beautiful domino effect ever, where you have the liberating of the human mind.
Yes. And I would say the liberating of the human body. So the desires for the good stuff in life, right?
Yes.
They see on TV and then they seek it out and they often just leave. like in the Soviet Union, to just walk away from their factories. They walk.
Well, North Korea, unfortunately, they're even more depraved than Russia, Soviet Union, where if you leave, they will go for your family.
Right.
The great leader Kim Il-sung said the class enemies must be exterminated 3 generations. And I just saw this special, I think it was National Geographic, where back in the 70s, there was a squadron of North Korean agents who were sent to South Korea to the Blue House. We have the White House, they have the Blue House, to assassinate the president of South Korea. They were outnumbered and outgunned and taken out, and they killed themselves or were shot. One guy escaped. He's like, all right, he saw it was going south, no pun intended. And they took his parents in North Korea into a stadium and shot him, mm-hmm. shot the parents. Mm-hmm. And now he's a preacher in South Korea. He's like, I will never forgive, even though I'm a Christian, I'll never forgive. And I don't expect him to forgive Kim Il-sung and Kim Jong-il for this. But this is what they do. It's not something that they're ashamed of. They go, no. We are proud. We got your parents and we're killing them as an example to show that you better not raise your kids to be traitors. But it's also funny that it's like, what would his suicide have gained you?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They're all dead. The mission failed.
Now, despite this use of over-the-top terror, right, against
the population, terror.
For sure, you're saying, I think, that the regime's days are numbered. We just don't know.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Oh,
because
yes.
Because of the fact that most of the population, as far as we can tell, certainly the younger
not most,
portion,
but many.
A lot of, especially the younger
yes.
North Koreans, are simply not interested in communism anymore or in the great leader anymore.
After a certain while, you can only listen to so many songs
right.
about the great leader Kim Il-sung. It's like, you know what? Let me just listen to some stupid dance music.
Some K-pop, baby.
And some K-pop.
K-pop is going to take that regime down. And K-pop is a hybridized form. It's American pop music and Korean pop music mixed together. It's not North Korean. It's not communist. It's individualistic. It's about base desires, like about dancing and fucking and drinking,
and
right?
They've started mimicking it in the North.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right. Now, here's what that is not. That's not democracy. That's not the spread of democracy, right?
It's democratic.
How so?
And it's because it's from the people. It's from the masses.
Well,
it's not democratic in terms of the ballot box, but it's certainly coming from the bottom and not from the top down,
so to speak. Yeah. But it is. It is an expression or an acting out on individual desires. There is no taking of social responsibility when people just download those TV shows onto their computers from the flash drives they carried across the river, right?
Sure.
I think we're agreeing here.
They're not doing this for political purposes.
That's right. So in that way, it's not democratic. It's not about taking control, the people taking control of that country.
Not
exactly.
At all.
Of the government. They're not interested in the government.
And in fact, if they were thinking those terms, they probably wouldn't do it.
And this is why progressives and the left ignore it, I submit. Because it is individualistic. It's not about social responsibility. It's not about democracy. It's just about pleasing themselves, right? Individually. Now, you and I see this, though, as revolutionary, right? When the individual can liberate and please herself, an authoritarian regime's days are numbered.
Yes.
That's it, right?
Yes.
That's not the spread of democracy. That's the spread of individual liberation.
Yes.
Okay, cool. Now, what do you want to live in? Do you want to live in a democracy or a monarchy or something else entirely? Like, what's your preference here? What do you think of democracy?
I'm not a fan.
Mm-hmm.
I am living a pretty happy life. I'm happy all the time.
Are you?
Yeah, I really am very, very blessed and very, very fortunate. Huh. I don't like, Emma Goldman, who I just mentioned earlier, she has this whole thing about how patriotism is subverted and it subverts, the good in people. And there's something to that. But being born in the Soviet Union and doing work with, North Korea, I think there's lots of things in this country that are, I would say, demonic, even though I'm not a religious person. I am very happy. I'm in a good place. And I think it's different for you because you're a dad.
Mm.
Not being a dad, there's a point in your life where things are good enough and you're kind of like, let's see where this goes. And instead of having to plan 5 steps ahead, you're like, I know my basement is pretty okay. So even if things fall apart, I'm still going to be okay. I'm not going to be homeless. And it's like anything after that's gravy. And that's a great place to be.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, strangers send me money on Twitter to spite people who come after me with the express purpose that it has to be spent on something completely frivolous and stupid. That is a beautiful, beautiful, wonderful place to live.
Hmm. But would you
monetize spite?
But would you like the American people to have less control over the government?
I don't think about the American people.
You should, because a lot of them vote and a lot of them decide how you and I should live.
Well, as obviously you know, and you and I agree that the voting is, you know, does not decide any of this. And as Goldman did say, voting changed anything, they'd make it illegal.
Would you like less democracy? Would you like people to be taking less social responsibility, less responsibility for you, which is what they're doing, right? That's a good Democrat knows what you want, Michael.
I think people, I would want people to take more personal responsibility. Right. One things I always point out is, and this is not unique to me, this is common with people dealing with anxiety or depression. If you're in a bad place, and this is advice that I think is really good advice, an actionable advice, I hate advice that's like, you can do it. No, tell people concrete steps that will better their situation. And even if it doesn't better the situation, at least they feel they're having that sense of autonomy and ownership. Right now, as you and I talk, and I've said this many times, there are senior citizens who are lonely. There are kids who don't have parents, you know, Big Brothers of America and Big Sisters of America. There's a dog you can walk at a kennel that might die. You have it within you right now to objectively make the world a better place. You don't care about that stuff. You can go to the gym. And right now, at the end of the day, when your brain is overactive and telling you you wasted today, you go, no, I didn't. I did work today, and I'm, on by one metric, objectively a better person than I was yesterday. So there are so many mechanisms. Yeah, I hate it when people call me a cynic. I'm very, very upbeat and positive perspective. There are so many mechanisms you can do to make improvement as opposed to monitoring someone's Twitter feed or going through their old social media posts and reporting them. Did you want to grow up and be a hall monitor? If so, you are the enemy, and you should be, well, I can't advocate what I would say, but
yes,
you're the enemy of decency.
Yeah, the enemy of decency. I wouldn't say that you're the enemy of decency. I would say you're the champion of decency. You're the enemy of me. If you want to be the hall monitor.
I think there's...
I was actually literally the kid put into the hall and taken to the principal's office by the hall monitor.
I think there is something extremely indecent. Yeah. About okay. Rifling through a stranger's history
sure.
For the purpose of causing them harm.
So this thing you said about just helping
strangers. And that applies to the cops as well.
Right. This thing you said about helping strangers and kids and dogs sure. And stuff, right? So when I was a socialist, that was the kind of thing that we would just make fun of and dismiss. It's sort of Christian, hang on, do-gooderism, which is not going to add up to anything positive socially, not anything significant socially. Now, let me say this right now. Especially in the last couple of years, I have really begun to live my life like that way. I used to be sort of an angry left-wing New Yorker who never, you know, gave anybody the time of day. I would help if someone asked me directly, but I would never go out of my way to help someone, right? And I was only kind and generous to strangers when I absolutely had to be. But just recently, in the last couple of years, I've started to be that way sort of naturally and effortlessly without thinking about it. And it brings genuine happiness to me, even in the depths of serious despair on a daily basis.
It takes a lot to get me angry in terms of like politics. One of the few things that makes me apoplectic was when Kim Kardashian went to the White House and freed a mom from jail who was facing a life in jail for not killing anyone. And it was made into a laughingstock by the corporate press. And we all saw the video of her family being reunited, crying hysterically with joy. Mm-hmm. And the parallels to North Korea, because there were certain moments in the past where they had reunification of families who hadn't seen each other for decades, and they're meeting, you know, brothers and sisters, dads and daughters, I mean, decades apart, and they're seeing each other for the first time. And you look at this and you can't not cry, because mm-hmm. it's just the purity of the joy. And for me, if you are looking at freeing a woman from jail and reuniting with her family, and your premise is not to see the beauty in this and to see it just purely as a cynical joke and a let me make fun of Kim Kardashian, the president, you are, I'm not using this word figuratively, I don't think, the devil. Like, if there's anything satanic on earth, it is that.
Yeah, again, I think our only difference is over choice of words. Yes, I wouldn't call them the devil, but what I would say is that they're hypocrites, that they're not actually interested in helping people.
Well, I don't think it's just hypocrisy. We all have little hypocrisies. I think it's genuinely evil that you would see beauty and joy and want to spit on it.
Yeah. Well, they're not interested in the things they claim they're interested in, helping the unfortunate, the oppressed.
But they're interested in destroying those things.
Yeah.
It's not just, oh, I don't care.
Right.
It's I'm actively spreading derision and not acknowledging how wonderful this is.
Exactly.
This is why I say you are the devil.
Okay. Again,
And worse than a Nazi.
This is, so to everybody who, you know, wonders about my relationship with you, I mean, I really do think often it's just
sexual.
A matter of, it's
really about, sexual.
Ooh, yeah. Well, hey, now, so, you know, fascist sex is really hot. Anyway, but the, no, it's that the difference is between us,
it's,
I think,
real
semantics.
Gas.
That's right. It's a real gas. Is that like a, anyway. So we're 3 years in, man. Trump was elected 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And now we are broadcasting from inside Gulag 13, where the blacks and the gays are strung up and the trans people are being tortured over barrels in the room down the hall.
Yeah.
And what is it? Oh, women have been made into what? Sex slaves? Breeders.
It's Handmaid's Tale.
Breeders and sex slaves. Yes. Yeah. I watched it. It's great. Actually.
I never watched it. Is it actually
good?
Is it?
Yeah. Because here's what's great about it. It argues strongly that men are just as miserable under that kind of regime as women are.
True.
Yeah, which surprised me, but it's great. I mean, it's like, yes, indeed, a super patriarchal society like that, in which everyone is essentially enslaved. Everyone is enslaved to the greater community, right? This sort of Christian Commonwealth Republic thing, totalitarian dictatorship. The men are enslaved as well, and they get punished severely when they have sex with people, with women who are not their wives. So it's actually pretty good. Anyway, we're 3 years in. We're living in The Handmaid's Tale, as everyone predicted. It all came true.
Slash Harry Potter.
That's right.
Simultaneously.
Can someone please, someone needs to go, I want to see like everything that was said by all the most famous journalists and political scientists and academics in 2016 and 2017. Someone needs to catalog all that, all the predictions that were made by them about what was going to happen after Trump won, right? I want to see, someone's got to catalog that list.
I'll give you two examples. My favorite.
None of it's happened.
One of my possibly favorite tweets of my time, of all time.
Nothing.
Was 2016, : Trump gets elected. 2017, can President Trump do that? 2018, I sure hope my team wins in the Hunger Games tonight.
Right.
But the example I always use is, we were told for over a year by the corporate press that Trump is so much of a thin-skinned, abrasive, violent person that he's just going to get in a bad mood and get us into World War III. These same people are simultaneously berating him for not getting into military conflict with Russia and North Korea, which are both military powers.
Right.
And they do this shamelessly. And what I say this line all the time, and I can't say enough, the establishment's bloodlust, and by establishment, I include the corporate press, the establishment's bloodlust for war cannot be overstated.
It's amazing.
And it is really, really evil.
Yeah. He was presidential when he bombed Syria. And
so when Madeleine Albright raises a glass to Kim Jong-un within miles of concentration camps, this was a great moment in diplomacy. Hmm. But when President Trump is palling around Kim Jong-un, this is treason and horrific. Maybe they're both treason, maybe they're both diplomacy. The idea that these are different situations, that's going to take me a bit of convincing.
So what is it about this bloodlust for war? Where does that come from? Why do
I don't know. I can't psychoanalyze people.
Remarkable. Is it? It's just that they hate Trump, and therefore whatever he does,
it's far broader than
must
Trump.
Be, except that they do like him when he's actually aggressive in terms of foreign policy.
World War I and World War II, which were just, especially World War I, massacres on just this unprecedented scale. Mm-hmm. Reagan and Thatcher win the Cold War without firing a shot. This isn't like, oh my God, this is great. We liberated half the world. We ended, at the very least, we ended a military stalemate, mm-hmm. and de-escalated tensions.
Yep.
Missiles pointing at each other, you know, war games. This was the theme of the 80s, that nuclear war is a second away. The fact that this threat, the Cuban Missile Crisis, the fact that this threat vanished, how is this not every day like, oh my God, what a beautiful miracle?
And now we can pull back the military and stop spending $1 trillion a year on it.
Right? Yeah, right.
But no.
The peace dividend.
What did Clinton do? No, he moved NATO right up to the borders of Russia,
course.
And we've been pumping even more money into the military than ever before. And we have machines that can go, you know, whatever it is, Mach speeds and fly under radar and destroy the entire planet 20 times over in 5 minutes.
Right.
Yeah, no, we should have been celebrating the end of the Cold War. Instead, we just kept going with it and ramping it up.
We should still be celebrating every 5 minutes, and this is the fault of the conservatives.
Cold War ain't over, see? Because Putin, for them, is just a continuation, an extension.
It's not a continuation, because they don't hate they hate Putin more than they hate the Soviet Union.
Okay, fair enough. Maybe.
It's not even a question.
You're right, they want to invade. I think they want to take over that country now more than they did then.
Of course, the Soviet Union is our friend. We need to understand them. They're going to be around forever, so we better get used to it. Oh, they're not around forever. Well, Putin's the devil, and we've
Yeah, they were predictable, right? Because you sort of knew what their ideology was and how they operated. This was George Kennan's whole thing.
They will tell you with a straight face that Putin interfered with our elections more than the Soviet Union.
And they actually believe it.
Yes.
Do you think they actually believe it, those people on MSNBC?
Yes.
Do you think Rachel Maddow really believes what she's been saying?
See, this is
about Russia.
This is like our
controlling
last,
this country.
This is like the last time I was here. What does Jared Taylor think about? I don't know. I'm not in her mind.
Just guess.
And there's,
you're around this.
I don't know her that much. I haven't watched her that much.
Okay, fine.
And I think that I got to tell you, I also think that there is a range. I think Maddow is pretty bright. There's some people who are complete NPCs and have no minds. So, for example, I use this example many times. If you watch Rachel Maddow's biography of Phyllis Schlafly, who was a great social conservative leader, mm-hmm. she single-handedly defeated the ERA, a hardcore right-winger. If you watch it, obviously Maddow's not a fan of Schlafly, but it is an amazing look. Like, you will have an accurate representation of Phil Schlafly's life. I remember Rachel Maddow had interviewing a guy who had written this homophobic book, and instead of being like, how dare you, blah, 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 she just went through it. She goes, you're saying that homosexuality is caused by, like, blah, 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 and race. How does race cause homosexuality? And he had no answer. Yeah. So she was very matter of fact.
She's very smart, very analytical. She has a PhD in political science.
Yeah, so
she's written books. This is why I watch her and I don't understand how she can possibly believe what she's saying, that Russia has taken over this country and that Trump works for Putin, and that anybody who says anything otherwise is also working for Putin and is a fascist. This is what she says every night. My parents watch it every single night.
Oh.
They think my friends are Nazis. I'm not kidding you, Michael. And I said to them,
are they wrong?
I'm not kidding you. I said, yeah, it's funny because one of my friends is a Jewish guy who went to Charlottesville. You.
We're friends with him.
And I don't think he's a Nazi.
Well, you don't, well.
But this is what many, many, many people who watch MSNBC think, including my very own dear parents.
Wow, okay.
I am, my friends are Nazis. People like you and Camille Foster, etc. Yeah, that's what they think.
But you, in all fairness, you are a lot more less judgmental of someone who's a Nazi than they would be.
I'm a lot more less judgmental. I am less judgmental of...
Yes.
I refuse to moralize against Nazis. I refuse to moralize against anyone.
You would
try
find it interesting and cool mm-hmm. to have a conversation with the Nazi.
I would.
Yeah, and they would be like, are you crazy?
Totally.
I do not want this anathema by me.
I want like a serious, hardcore, alt-right intellectual on the show. I've been looking for them. I mean, if Mencius Bulbug would come on here,
he
I
would
love them. Any you recommend them. The door is open. I want a serious intellectual, though, a real thinker, someone who's written and thought about
you
these things deeply.
You haven't reached out to Jared?
I have not reached out to Jared Taylor because I have to say I'm not that interested in his ideas. He doesn't really impress me.
That didn't seem to be the case last time I was here.
I was
pretty interested in his ideas.
I was interested because I didn't know anything about him. I was trying to get some information.
Oh, I misunderstood. I thought you actually knew him quite
no.
well because he's the big figure.
Those were honest questions and you refused to answer them,
for God's sake. I completely misunderstood until now.
Oh my God.
I don't understand how you, with your background and your interests, could have been unfamiliar with him.
Why would I care about Jared Taylor? He's a non-figure in academic history.
But he's academic history.
Or history at all. I mean,
he's
an intellectual life. He's a non-figure.
He's a major figurehead in this scene.
Sure, but
that's
I hadn't
why.
Studied the scene until you came along.
And I didn't understand.
You're my portal to it.
I'm
that's
shocked.
Why I was so frustrated with you.
Because you're so interested in race. I would thought you had done some of your homework on your own.
Oh, I mean, I know, but what I've heard... Anyway, I looked into him and I didn't find much of interest. No, I want one of these like OG alt-right guys like Moldbug or I don't know who else is there. I mean, there's several.
You've had Goad?
Well, Jim is the closest, yeah.
Yeah.
But not
he's
really.
He's very bright.
Yeah, oh, for sure. Jim's brilliant and hilarious. Race realism is racism, is it not?
You're the one who likes those semantic games and thinks they're
come
pointless.
On, man. Play with me here. Race realism is the belief in what?
Oh, race realism is racist by any
thank
definition.
Thank you. Okay,
yes,
just to explain this, because a lot of people don't understand this. They think that race realism is not racist, or it's something else.
Well, okay, the term racism has been used, I think, not unfairly, mm-hmm. to have a negative connotation.
Clearly.
They would say, okay, racism right. is not, before you get to the moral aspect, it is based on, it's a scientific truth,
yep.
and you have to acknowledge that the different races exist, they have different capabilities, and you have to start from there.
Yeah, so that
and
is...
And I think it also, it's a clever marketing term to call it realism, because if you disagree, well, you're against reality.
That's right, like me. I'm a postmodernist, so I'm against that.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. So would you agree that that is definitionally racist?
They would too.
Yes. Okay, good. Would you also agree, this is what I think of it, that is the view of more than 99% of Americans?
No.
There are different races with different capabilities.
Here's why I would not agree.
Really? Most Americans?
I don't think most Americans would allow themselves to articulate that thought. So it might be their operating assumption. They would never say it explicitly. Here's an example.
Okay.
This is something, I don't remember where I encountered this anecdote. There was a class, and the professor said, can you name something that black people are better at than white people? And people raised their hand, and they had examples, you know, historically, you know, maybe living under oppression, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And he goes, okay, can you name one thing that white people are better at than black people? Silence. Fear.
Nothing.
Right. So the idea that people would say this explicitly, they've been so taught that you have to dance around this issue and be on thin ice. And Mencken, I have to say this quote many times, H.L. Mencken said, the average man does not want to be free. He simply wants to be safe. And that is absolutely true. So the idea that 99% of people would feel comfortable thinking, let alone articulating the big taboo, I do not agree.
But we do suspect, don't we, that most Americans are race realists in a sense?
No,
in their soul, and deep in their minds, they won't articulate it, but they do basically believe this.
And people
that there are different races of human beings with different capabilities.
And people compartmentalize their minds very commonly.
Indeed. Yeah. And it is so taboo that they may not even allow themselves to articulate it just on the top level of their own consciousness in their own heads.
And here's a parallel example.
But I do believe it's in there.
Yeah.
I believe race realism is the dominant way of thinking about race.
Here's a parallel example.
Yeah.
If you asked,
which is ironic, right?
Most people, do you think gay men have a far higher amount of sexual partners mm-hmm. than straight men? Mm-hmm. I think they would pause because on the one hand, the answer is obvious. It's two dudes.
Right.
On the other hand, it's like, this sounds like it could be bad. Exactly. So if I say it, so that's what would happen.
Are you suggesting that the American people are not terribly bright when it comes to politics?
I'm suggesting humans are not terribly capable of thinking critically.
I agree with that too, but I think Americans in particular.
I disagree.
Not so great. Really?
I think we're much better thinking critical than Europe. Yes.
Oh, okay. I didn't think about the Europeans. They are pretty slow, aren't they?
Yes. The British accent has evolved to signal intelligence. I think the median British person is dumber than the median American.
No.
And you say this like, oh, Mike, everyone
have
knows
you heard them
accent.
Talk? Yeah, they're so good talk. At it. Yeah. Come on.
I was there. Awesome. You guys are dumb.
They're awesome at English.
Yeah.
Come on, man.
Their Englishing is the best.
All right. Yep. So the new right.
Yeah.
The movement, not your book. This movement that you're describing. What's its current status, and what do you predict?
I don't make predictions. Uh-huh. And
I knew you'd say that.
I literally say it in the book, so of course I'm going to say it in person.
What are their prospects for taking control of this country?
If you had predicted 2 weeks ago, or no, 2 years ago, that President Donald Trump will be saying that if our new Muslim congresswoman doesn't like America, she could go back to Somalia, you would be regarded understandably as a lunatic, and yet that is what happened to some extent. So prospects, I think their prospects are extremely bright.
Really?
Yes.
Ooh.
I think to be a member of the new right is to be red-pilled. And by red-pilled, it's from the documentary The Matrix, is you take the red pill and you understand that what you're presented as, in the metaphor of the fish with the water, what you're presented as truth in your culture is actually a carefully constructed story that is being put into place by the universities, the media, the government being the implementation of this. And once you realize that, you can't go back. And you start seeing everything with those green digits, just like in The Matrix, and you're like, oh. And especially because of social media, corporations, regardless of politics, are slow, they are inefficient, they are not, do not have quick response. When you have your agitprop and what you're trying to pull being called out in real time, and people can see this, even if they don't agree with the goal of the person criticizing you, they will at least acknowledge, okay, this is being disingenuous. I remember an example of this where I was just shocked, where they said, well, between 2002 and 2000, let's suppose 18, Muslims only had X amount of terrorist attacks in a year in America. I'm like, did anything happen in 2001? Is there a reason you're starting? And it's just like the brazenness of these things is just absolutely over. And the thing is, back in the day, they could get away with it. Now they can't, but okay. They haven't changed tactics accordingly. The New York Times, which has covered up Stalin's murder genocide of millions of Ukrainians, and I went back and I read the original reporting by Walter Duranty. I have a Twitter master feed. You would think, let's suppose, historically, I was a politician, I was an organization, I wasn't as hard on Hitler as I could have been, and, you know, all this other stuff. You would think that an organization that covered up the murder of millions of people would really be, you know what, we did the wrong thing, we really got to be careful with this issue. Just this week, was talking about, yeah, Americans put a man on the moon, but the Soviets had the first like black person and woman and blah, blah, blah in space. I don't even know what they're referring to. How many black people are in Russia? And it's like you, and they had an article, Happy Birthday Marx, an article about women had got laid more under communism. I'm sure they're getting raped. And it's like you would think if there was any kind of sense of decency and remorse that you're like, all right, we got to really tiptoe about this because we got a lot of blood on our hands. But there isn't. And this is what conservatives get wrong, because conservatives think there is a bias, whereas my perspective and your perspective is there's not a bias. There's an agenda. The reporting is what is secondary. It is the message that is primary, whereas the conservative perspective is, oh, they're trying to be newspaper men, but the bias infects what they're trying to do. No. This is what they're trying to do. It's the reporting that happens as a consequence sometimes.
So you think that the interventions of what you're calling the new right have made more people able to see the matrix?
Yes.
And understand the matrix?
Yes.
And know that it exists?
Correct.
So they've changed the discourse. They've altered the consciousness.
Irrevocably.
That many Americans and many people outside of America as well are now aware that there's been a cathedral built all around them.
Yes. Well put.
Called progressivism. And it's at least 100 years old.
At least.
And it controls much of their lives, much of at least the world they inhabit.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And this...
Do you disagree?
I don't know. We're not going back from that. Just because I still live on the coasts, and I still live around people who think that, you know, Trump is run by Russia, and
they're blue-pilled.
My friends are Nazis, and yeah, I mean, okay, for lack of a better word, they're still blue-pilled.
Yeah.
But you're saying this is different, that the ground underneath them has shifted.
Yeah, and those people have no minds. They're irrelevant one way or another.
Well, they have PhDs often.
Sure, but they have no minds.
Oh, okay.
So
and they read books and they listen to podcasts.
Sure,
and
but they're not moving the needle.
And they if have you're, high IQs, interestingly.
If you're a fish that knows how to spit, you're not changing the volume of water, right?
The higher the IQ, the more likely you are to be anti-new right.
So the dangerous ones are the midwits. Vox Dei, who's an alt-right thinker, coined the term. And a midwit is someone who has a 115 IQ, marginally intelligent. Hmm. And they are the ones who really are in the worst of all worlds, like the uncanny valley. Because if you have a room full of people, like a bunch of guys, and one of them is 6 foot, so objectively he is tall. Mm-hmm. He is tall than average. However, the amount of times he will be in position to be noticeably tall is virtually zero. No one is going to think twice about someone who's 6 foot. Same way with someone who is objectively one standard deviation smarter than average, 65th percentile, 115 IQ. The chances anyone will be like, wow, this guy's smart, are very low. So they have to take any tactic they have to present themselves intelligence. And as importantly, because they can say, I am objectively smart, just like a 6 foot guy is objectively tall, they equivocate between being 6 foot and being 7 foot, because they're both air quotes tall. Well, I'm smart and Einstein's smart, so therefore I'm the same thing. So they're very bad at thinking, and they think they're brilliant, and they are pervasive in our culture.
Well, I would say...
And this is why my show is called You're Welcome, to weed them out.
Yeah, I'm talking about the people at the top of the food chain.
Oh, yeah.
Intellectually, the most educated people.
Sure.
And I would say, you're right that they tend to be they're not very good at arguing, and that's because they don't have to argue, because they're basically in the same rooms with each other
all
the time.
Yeah, it's like you on my show this week.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So you know what? I don't know what my IQ is. I've never been told.
It's at least 116.
Yeah? Oh, I'm above midwit?
You would be...
Am I like high midwit?
No, you're probably like 130.
Average midwit?
You don't think you're 130, 140?
I have no idea.
You're 130, 140.
Well, I don't even know what's high. What's good?
140 is genius.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
So you're clearly...
What does genius mean to them?
Someone...
To the people who say... Like, what can I do if I'm a genius?
Write innovative books.
Oh, well, I don't know if my books are innovative.
Your book's innovative.
Oh, I guess I'm a genius then. So I don't need to take the test.
I would bet you're 140.
Should I take the test?
Yeah.
What
might tell you that you're a fag, though.
That's a different test.
No, the IQ test.
That was the test on Tuesday that we took when I was in your...
You take an IQ test. This isn't a fag. The hell? How did I end? I was just answering logic questions.
Well, a smart fag, though.
Genius.
Yeah, genius fag. That's going to be my Twitter handle from now on. Yeah. Genius fag, Thad Russell. Thank you. Michael Malice, thanks for doing this again. Interestingly, we didn't fight nearly as much as we used to. There was less frustration. I hope this means it was still entertaining for the listeners. But
I do not hope that.
Yeah.
I wish you nothing but strife and misery.
Yes. Nothing but the worst of luck to you, Malice. You malicious bastard. Okay, man. Thanks for doing this. And I think we'll probably do it again.
Awesome.
Appreciate it.
This is the Unregistered Podcast, and I'm Thaddeus Russell. To become a supporting member of the show, go to unregisteredlisteners.com. Thanks for listening.